There we go. There we go. Hey, everybody. It's Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. We are, I think, on a Thursday, making sense of the news. Molly's out. Kimberly's in.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey.
What?
All right. It's good to be here. Happy to be here. Even though it's a hollowed out shell of a Thursday. And there's so many things to feel hollowed out about. It was hard to pick one.
So I noticed you have three. So, you know, pick on the fly there, pal. Pick on the fly.
Well, it's three articles or links, but really one central story, which is the pandemic. And this morning, the CDC told everyone, can you please stay home for Thanksgiving and not travel? Because basically we have uncontrolled spread in this country. It's very dangerous. A lot of asymptomatic people are the ones spreading this virus. And so one of the links that I have is just the CDC literally begging people not to travel for Thanksgiving. And then earlier this week, the Washington Post had this really interesting interactive map where it showed if you go to the max and have a Thanksgiving gathering or whatever holiday gathering of 10 people, which is the limit, or if you go beyond that, 10 people or more, your relative chance that somebody at that gathering has COVID. And there's a lot of red on that map. So there was that. And then on top of that, all of these pieces coming out, including this one at from CNN, that said, look, you have all these people lining up to get testing before they travel for Thanksgiving. But those tests, and particularly one test on one day in advance of your travel, may not be enough to prove that you do not have COVID-19 or the virus. And look, I wanted to go and have Thanksgiving dinner with my uncles in their magical fairyland in Maryland. But I'm not. I'm staying home. Yeah. And I'm making my very small turkey, and I'm going to eat it for days and days and days because it's not safe. It's not safe. And so I am just getting increasingly concerned about, what it's going to look like. But I hope that people, make smart choices and, are safe as possible. So it's three links, but it's really one story. So I feel like that still only counts as one.
It really is one story. In fact, really, there is only one story, right? I mean, there's one story right now, I think you take the transition hoo-ha out of the news, and there is one story. And look, let's not underplay what's going on with the political system in this country, but fundamentally, there is one thing that's affecting every single person in this economy. All right, so here's mine, and it kind of plays off the whole there is only one story. And it is the pandemic, and it is this economy, and it is what is being done to fix this economy. So today, it came out that the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve are in something of a public spitting match, which is really unusual because, yes, independent Fed and all of that, but really, they usually work pretty closely together. So what happened was this. Well, let me back up for a minute, actually. What happened back in March and April, March, I guess, when the CARES Act passed, was that the Congress, through the Treasury Department, authorized the Federal Reserve, using Treasury Department money, that is to say taxpayer money, to make a bunch of loans, to establish lending facilities. We've talked about some of them, I think, on What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. The Main Street Lending Facility and the Municipal Lending Facility and a bunch of things designed to, number one, install confidence in this economy that there was going to be liquidity, that is money available when people and banks and companies need it. But also to actually provide that money, right? So it's confidence and it's tangible. And that has worked reasonably well with some glitches for a number of months. This morning, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin writes a letter to Jay Powell in which he says, in essence, Jay, those hundreds of billions of dollars that we are letting you use to fund all these loans, I want that money back and we're going to shut down these lending facilities. And Jay Powell writes a letter back to Steve that says, hey, Steve, he doesn't really say suck it, but he kind of does. He says, we're keeping the money and
and we're going to keep these facilities going as long as we can. So this is something of a really high profile dispute between these two agencies that are critical to the health of the economy. I want to make 2 points. Number one, this is the Federal Reserve saying, no, we need to keep these going for as long as we can. And the Trump administration saying, no, we're going to shut it down at the end of the year. And number two, there is some chatter out there that maybe what they could do is take this money and reallocate it. Congress could, and use that as some kind of relief bill. So this thing is not over, but I just think it's really emblematic of the dysfunction right now, both in the political branch of this economy and also the actual economy that this is happening, because it's not great news. And my guess would be, I have not checked actually here at 3:40 in the afternoon, Los Angeles time. But I would guess that futures are down, too. I guess that stock futures are down. So that's my thing.
So this is interesting to me for all the reasons that you mentioned. But also today we got news that McConnell supposedly is ready to return to the negotiation table on a stimulus package, right?
I do not believe that. I do not believe that. Sorry.
No?
I don't want to
be
the naysayer. No. I have no idea. I haven't seen the news either way, but I refuse to believe that he genuinely is interested.
Okay. I was reading of a bunch of the sort of Washington journalists saying that there's potential talks of going back to the negotiating table for another stimulus package, which, you know, I know you guys have the half full, half empty thing and no hope there. But if Mnuchin is going around trying to get, you know, an extra $500 million or something from whatever, or $500 trillion. How much money is it we're talking about?
Yeah, it's 500 and something billion dollars. So it's $500 trillion.
Okay, so
it's right in that zone of where Mitch McConnell is comfortable, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but if you add that money to the fact that McConnell was comfortable with $500 trillion, and then you add back in, and if you add in this money, you get closer to the numbers that the Democrats are asking for. So anyway, it makes me wonder if perhaps there is some movement towards trying to get some sort of deal before the end of the year because folks in Congress are looking at, and I know that they just went on vacation, but folks in Washington are looking at what is going on in this country and the spike in cases and the spike in death, and maybe thinking that perhaps we have to figure out something. And you know, I'm going to have fingers crossed that even though, you know, all norms broken, all of the stuff that you mentioned, yes, but maybe this means there's actual progress happening. I mean, this is me speculating here. I don't know. But that is that's one thing that jumps out. The other thing that someone else was reporting, and I'll find the link for it. It was Gina. You shared her Twitter thread.
Oh, Gina Smiley.
She was tweeting that this kind might handcuff the Biden administration when it comes in terms of how useful and available these programs will be if that money is no longer sitting there. And that is very fascinating to me also.
No, I totally agree. I totally agree. And I don't think I had this on my bingo card at the end of the Trump administration. I don't know why I didn't, but the idea that they would, I don't know. I don't even know what I don't know. It's just, we're in unprecedented times. That's where we are.
I don't think most of us had the vast majority of things that have happened in this administration on our bingo cards, except for, well, no. I mean, there are a few people who called it from the beginning in terms of what's happening. Mm-hmm. And now there's this robust debate of how we would talk about what is going on in this transition if it were happening anywhere else in the world. If you literally the person who lost the election fighting it out in court, undermining institutions, and all of the other elements of his ruling party backing him up, we would be calling this something very different if it were not happening in the United States.
Yes, we would. And I can't even believe it's happening. Cannot believe it's happening.
Well, this is American exceptionalism, isn't it? No, wait. This is actually...
Okay, go.
No, it is. It is. Because... Well, This is the sense that this cannot possibly happen to us because we are so different from everywhere else in the world. And yes, the American experiment is unique, and it's the melting pot and all of the good things you want to say, even with all the problems that we have. Yes, but the same that mentality, I think, stops us from recognizing how bad things can get if we don't participate, which is why I think we saw this record voter turnout and sharp increase in civic engagement is because people realize that what we have, we do have to work for it in order to keep it. Okay, now I'm done.
Yep. No, I completely agree with that. I would just suggest that merely voting, as the last 2.5 weeks have demonstrated, merely voting is not enough.
Nope.
Right.
And especially exactly not just voting for president, because as we saw in Wayne County Michigan, every single elected position in your government matters.
Yep. Yep. Okay, now. Okay, so mine is a follow-up from the other day, and I frankly don't remember what day it was. It might have been, I don't even know what it was. We were talking about social media and conservative voices on there and how it was the day that Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey wound up testifying, and I had pointed out that of the top 10 stories on Facebook that day, they were all like Donald Trump Jr. and Fox News, and then there was one something else. And then I also said, oh, there's a Fox 29 thing on here as well, and that's probably some conservative Fox local news outlet. Well, lo and behold, I'm an idiot because it wasn't. And thanks to the person on Twitter who pointed this out to me, that actually that item, and I don't – it was the handle here is M. LeBold, whatever that is. So the Fox 29 item that I pointed out the other day as conceivably being or possibly being a conservative posting on Facebook was in fact actually – a local Fox News outlet from Newcastle, Delaware, pointing out that the Delaware SPCA had found a home for a dog who had been in a shelter for 866 days. And I just think that's good news. That's good news, right?
And the ears and the snoot, it's so cute.
I know. That's like years that this dog has
you
been waiting
to find. You just want to boop the nose.
Yep. Yep. Oh, it's a shoe. Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, you just want to boop her nose. Adorable. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That definitely did make me smile. So my make me smile is about Chris Krebs, who we've talked about before. He is the U.S. official who was the director of the CISA, which is the sort of government cybersecurity agency. He was recently fired. And basically for standing up for the integrity of the election. So Chef Jose Andres, who's been feeding so many people and doing really amazing work throughout the pandemic and everywhere else, honestly, and helping keep people fed, he tweeted out at Chris Krebs, "You will always have a seat and a table at my home, at my places, country above party, we the people." And it's a really nice tweet. To which Chris Krebs responds, "Thanks for the offer, but with 5 kids, we don't get out much. I have a better idea. How about I be your sous chef and help your awesome mission to feed people struggling to put food on the table? I got knife skills." To which his wife gets on Twitter and validates that he's a good cook. And now they were saying, and then Jose Andres responded that they're going to cook together. And
that's cool.
I love that this is something really a dark moment that is now being leveraged to help people. And there have been so many examples of this in this pandemic where people are just really showing humanity in amazing ways and some pretty dark times and stepping up to do a kindness. And that just really makes me smile.
Totally. And one other shout out here for social media, right? Because for all that we complain about social media being a cesspool, this is one of the things it can really do. It can make these moments happen, which is kind of awesome.
Yeah. Yes, and let us all enjoy them.
Yeah. And we will. All right, we're done. That's us on a Thursday. Back tomorrow for Economics on Tap, the YouTube live stream. We will also do Are we? I don't even know if we're going to do this or not. We can do half full, half empty? I don't know. Or is that
yes, I have been informed that we are.
Oh, okay. We are. all right. We'll also do this just as a little PSA. Subscribe to the newsletter, would you? We're doing the numbers on presidential memoirs. Who wrote the first one? Who wrote the worst one? And how much money these things can make for one Barack Obama? I'm going to buy it.
But doesn't he have like two now?
You can sign up at marketplace.org/newsletters. This is his third, right? And he's got one more volume to go. Yeah. Yep.
Hey, good money.
Oh, go ahead.
Can get
I heard the breath. Go ahead. You were all set to go. You should go.
Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is a digital producer. Ethan Peretz is the intern extraordinaire. And Erica Phillips writes the newsletters and the Make Me Smart skill on the smart device.
Charlton Thorpe was in charge in the studios down in L.A. today. Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Donna Tam is producing. Star Nieves is executive directing. There it is. Another Thursday. In the can.
But I think we ended it not quite so hollowed out.
No, I think we did all right.
Yeah.
Green Chef Andres and that dog getting a new home after 866 days. I'll take that.
My hollowed out shell is full.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.